My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Good Monday afternoon, and welcome into Grant and Danny. We are live on 106.7 The Fan from Nationals Park, where we are getting ready for what is going to be an epic day, not only at this ballpark, but in D.C. sports. So much going on. Danny, there are plenty of days, especially during the summer, where you and I are sitting here before the show trying to figure out what we're going to talk about for 4.5 hours.
What do we do today?
Today's not one of those days, man.
Mm-mm.
We do not have that problem. Dylan Cruz makes his major league debut here at the park, so we'll be live at field level during batting practice to bring you Dylan Cruz's first session in the cage as he's still making his way to the ballpark. He is not going to be on site for his 2:15 media availability because of his travel getting banged by the weather, but Dylan Cruz, first ever game right here at Nats Park tonight. Of course, the Commanders finished up the preseason last night with a win over the New England Patriots. A lot of roster decisions looming in the next 24 hours. We'll discuss that. Josh Harris spoke to the media for 23 minutes, answered a bunch of questions yesterday. Plenty of meat on that bone. That will come up. And CeeDee Lamb just got paid by the Dallas Cowboys. But otherwise, nothing's going on.
Yeah, other than that, we're not busy. Dude, so a few things that you said there just to begin things off. The player of the year in his respective sport from LSU, number 2 overall pick, will make his debut. That's for two people, right? We got that going. I wasn't sure whether Jaden Daniels would get there first or Dylan Cruz would. Looks like Cruz will be first on Plymouth Rock here, which is really, really cool. Second, you already said this, and I don't want to gloss over it. You and I did an event in Richmond, thanks to AWOD and everybody at 910 The Fan for having us down there. It was a blast. It was really, really fun to hang out. But we were talking about this, and one of the things that I said on stage, and I guess I realize I'm quoting myself here, so we should all probably settle down.
According to ancient philosopher, yeah, Danny Ruye.
Well-known 45-year-old white Danny Ruye said the following. No, I will not take it for granted all year. I will not be taking it for granted. I don't know when I'm going to stop to smell the roses here. The owner of the football team calmly spoke to the media. Just a human being interacted with other human beings. And I know that sounds trivial and trite. If you're out of this market and you came and you're listening to this program, you're going, what the hell are you talking about? For decades, multiple decades, the relationship at best was adversarial. At worst, it was lawsuits were threatened or actually were executed where he tried to put a newspaper out of business. The strategy to try to get the beat reporters fast food so they'd be more lethargic, trying to get Jason LaCanfora moved off the beat. This was the norm. That was the day-to-day. Instead of actually trying to do well, they tried to undermine the people that would report on how poorly they would do. And this was just a normal run of events. Whether you agreed or disagreed with something that Josh Harris said, you want to prioritize this or that, or you don't care about going to RFK, or you do, any of those things, that's just regular football discussion. That's just normal sports stuff. The owner of the football team, as he should, sat down and answered questions and was thoughtful and forthright and great.
Yeah, we're going to get into that, and we got a lot of audio from Josh Harris yesterday. I was lucky enough to have been in that press conference, got to ask him a couple of questions, so definitely want to talk about that. You'll hear from Mike Phillips of The Fan in Richmond, who was at last night's preseason game. We'll get some roster battle questions lined up for him. We'll also talk about some of Harris's availability. Matt Maiocco, who covers the 49ers out in the Bay Area, is going to stop by today as well. Maiocco having to get back on the Brandon Ayuk beat last night when an insider suggested that maybe Washington and San Francisco were talking or could soon be talking again about an Ayuk trade. So all of that coming up on the show. But let's get to the news that broke literally as we were going on the air, right at about 2 o'clock here, 10 minutes or so ago. And that was that the Cowboys and all-pro wide receiver CeeDee Lamb have struck a deal on a massive four-year extension. Danny, it's worth $136 million in total money, according to NFL media. Lamb is going to get $100 million in guarantees and a wide receiver record $38 million signing bonus. And on top of all that, his AAV, which is right at about $34 million, crept up on just behind Justin Jefferson. $35 million per year, surpassed A.J. Brown, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyreek Hill, and the other $30 million men at wide receiver. So after all the consternation, the back and forth, Jerry Jones saying they weren't in a rush, CeeDee Lamb tweeting one emoji after another, it's over. CeeDee Lamb gets his deal, did not play in the preseason, didn't practice during training camp, and he'll now have a week and a half to get ready for football with the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, the machine works. Two guys, by the way, drafted after Henry Ruggs III, drafted after Jerry Jeudy, have gotten themselves paid the two highest receiver contracts in human history, CeeDee Lamb and then the aforementioned Justin Jefferson. That always amazes me, always fun to think back to what could have been. Anyway, yeah, he's a superstar. He's great. There are a handful of guys, I think, in this league, when given that kind of feature opportunity, could take advantage of it fully and put up those kind of numbers. Jefferson's one, Lamb is one, Tyreek Hill is one, I think Jamar Chase is one, and you could argue about who else can go there. Like, you could give a lot of guys a lot of looks, and they'd put up really good numbers if you're the best of a bad bunch. It's your Terrell Pryor corollary, right, which is a very good theory. If you're on a bad team and you're the best of the bad team, it's like a lot of guys could score 20 a game for a 20-win team in the NBA. You know, kind of same deal for football. I think for a prolific offense, he is a true, honest-to-goodness bona fide number one Bill Drawfrance around type player. He's a superstar. He
irrefutable.
Yeah.
I mean, there was no doubt. People sleep on how good he's been. Do you guys know that he caught 135 balls last year to lead the NFL? 135 last season. He went for 1,749 yards. He has back-to-back 100 catch seasons, back-to-back 1,300-yard years. In fact, it's three straight years where he's had at least 1,100 yards. Over the last three seasons, it's kind of like him and Justin Jefferson. So when you look at it from that perspective, kind of goes without saying that he deserves to be the $34 million number two highest paid wide receiver in football. Even if you think Tyreek Hill is better, which he is, it wasn't his turn to get paid. It was CeeDee Lamb's turn to get paid. But remember the run he went on last year. I hadn't seen anything like this based on volume. How they use him, Danny, how often Dak throws him the football. Listen to this run from weeks 7, 8, and 9. Targets, 14, 16, and 14. Catches, 12, 11, and 11. Yards, 158, 191, 151. He went in four straight weeks for 117, 158, 191, 151. He had a 225-yard game on 13 catches and a one-point win last year. He's gotten to a point, and this is what a number one is to me. Everyone in the stadium knows it's going to him. Everybody on the other defense knows he's the number one player on the opposing offense. And he's still going to get 12 targets. He's still going to make 9 catches. He's still going to go for a buck 20. And you can't stop it. He has become truly one of the best in football. And I do think he's deserving of the contract. Now, the math that's going to get difficult for Dallas is, how do you pay him? Check. Dak, soon enough. And Micah Parsons, who you know they're going to pay. I'm more certain they pay Parsons, by the way, than I am Dak Prescott.
Mm.
But how do you pay all three of those guys, take up the percentage of the cap that is going to be taken up by that trio, and then around that triumvirate build a winner? That's going to be the experiment that they have to try to execute in the next 12 months.
Yeah, it's a tightrope you have to walk, right? I mean, these are all, you know, at least in Parsons and Lamb's case, two of the 10, 20, 25 best players in the league, certainly among the top three or four at their given positions. I don't know how you quantify what Micah Parsons is. He's a Swiss Army knife that hits the quarterback a million times. But for Prescott, you know, maybe it depends on how high or low on him. Some people might have him as high as 6 or 7, others probably 12 or 13. That's irrelevant to me. He's above the threshold for quarterback, which means you just get paid, just what you do. And Prescott and his camp certainly know that. But it's the – a fascinating discussion or sort of a kind of, you know, an extra challenge you have to do. Once you've identified them, found them, paid them, you now have to be so cost effective, so thrifty, draft so well, be so forward thinking, be willing to let really good players go a lot in order to keep that core together. That's, you know, the guys at the Tyler Biotis level who we're fortunate enough to have here in Washington. It means you got to let go of a guy that led the league in interceptions. You got to let go of the Dorrance Armstrongs who might step into larger roles, and you've got to nail the next crop every single year to be competitive.
NFC East landscape doesn't really change because I think almost everybody had the expectation that CeeDee Lamb was not going anywhere. He was going to stay in Dallas. Mm-hmm. But I do think the amount of money he just got maybe changes how the Cowboys operate otherwise around him on the roster. But $34 million per year and some records at the wide receiver position for CeeDee Lamb, who did very, very well in this contract. We'll talk more about this as the day goes on. We are at Nationals Park, as we told you right off the top. It is Dylan Cruz night here. The Nationals are giving away 10,000 Dylan Cruz debut T-shirts. In fact, Danny, grab that one over there behind you. I want to show the 106.7 The Fan YouTube stream where people are watching the show today. Of course, you're listening on the Odyssey app all over the country or in the DMV on 106.7 The Fan, our flagship. But these shirts are gorgeous. They say, "Welcome to the show, Dylan Cruz. Let's go Nats," with the G-E-A-U-X LSU style. Go Tigers. They're really well done. They did the same thing for James Wood, which I thought was a smash hit. And it's a really, really cool idea. They don't have to do that. People are going to come or they're not going to come. A lot of folks are going to buy tickets to see Dylan Cruz's first game with or without a giveaway. But just to reward some of your diehards that are coming out to see the kid that have been excited for months.
Love that.
I just think it's a nice touch.
Me too.
And there aren't enough nights like this for fans at this ballpark where it's really exciting to come here. I was joking with a legend in the D.C. sports biz, David Aldridge, last night over at the Commanders game. We were at the field, the old X.
The X, the Nubs field.
And he walked into the Josh Harris presser and we're sitting there a couple seats apart and he said, "You going to Nats Park tomorrow night?" Said, "Absolutely, wouldn't miss it." And we kind of both thought about how funny it is to say that here in late August of a lost season in the middle of a rebuild. Because there's just not a whole lot of days like this where generally right now being a Nats fan is a kind of have-to proposition. Today's a get-to gig. You don't have to go to the game. You get to go to the game to see Dylan Cruz. And I love these T-shirts. I love that they did it.
Well, very well put. I mean, just to say it this way. There are, I think there are four murals or, you know, big pictures, posters of guys. When you're in around Nats Park, sort of, you can look up and see the, like, whatever, they're 50-foot tall, big pictures of guys. One's Davey Martinez. One is Josiah Gray, who's not playing this year. One's Lane Thomas, who doesn't play here anymore, and the other is C.J. Abrams. And I'm not saying that to make fun or be disrespectful. I'm telling you, that's the point, is the future is the selling point, the next thing, the horizon, where a year and a half ago, you had to really squint. You go, well, if C.J. Abrams hits, well, if you know, if James Wood it continues to play, maybe if Elijah Green starts making more contact, and Mackenzie Gore figures it out, and this and this and this. And now you don't have to squint as hard. You can see it. You can see a move or two. You can see some of the development of these guys. You can see a pleasant surprise, a guy like Luis Garcia step into his own and be a bona fide major leaguer who's having a really nice season. And you kind of add it up a little bit. You go, it's not distant anymore. It's still in the future. But it's not forever like it may have felt a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
Well, to your point, those big building-like posters that take up the entire height of the parking garages, next year, one of those will be James Wood. One of those is going to be Dylan Cruz. And then one is probably going to be C.J. Abrams or perhaps Mackenzie Gore or whatever pitcher they go get. But at least two of the three or four are going to be the guys that graduated this year. It should be noted, I think, and this needs to be discussed before the debut. When James Wood came up, he had dominated in the minor leagues. James Wood had been the best player in AAA and arguably the best player in minor league baseball at the moment of his promotion. And it stood to reason, based on the quality of his at-bats, the on-base percentage, you know, how he was swinging it, that he was going to have a chance to have some immediate success at the major league level. Now, even by my lofty expectations, in a year in which the gap has grown between AAA and the big leagues exponentially, I didn't think he'd be as good as he's been this season. He's hitting .284 with an .822 OPS. He draws a ton of walks. He's already probably the best player in the lineup, and he's certainly the most feared hitter on this team. But I think if that is kind of what we're used to this season with one of the big promotions where they gave away T-shirts, there's got to be some tamping down of expectations slightly for Cruz, which isn't to knock Dylan, who's been very solid in the minor leagues, but it has not been James Wood dominant, right? Wood has elite power. Wood has what looks to me to be like MVP potential with some of what he's been able to do at the high minors. Cruz, who was in college just a year ago,
yeah,
won the College World Series at LSU 13 months ago, was drafted number two overall a little over 12 months ago, has been in the minor leagues now, whereas James Wood's been doing it for better part of 3 years as a pro. Dylan Cruz has been doing it for a few hours, right? To get to the big leagues this fast, to play the way that he did, where over a .162, he was on pace for, you know, 25 homers and 40-plus steals or something. Some very solid power, speed numbers. He's a terrific defensive center fielder who they'll move to right field now in the major leagues, which is where he was for the last few weeks at Rochester while he was getting ready. But I just don't think people should expect him to be what Wood has been so far, where he immediately hits, it's immediately a big impact. It's going to be a transition, and they're giving him these 31 games that are low stakes, Danny, to get his feet wet, to go into the offseason, let's see what you got to work on, and then let's give him a chance to try to make the big club out of spring training next year. Maybe he starts at AAA for a little while and they call him up quickly, but I don't think that this is James Wood 2.0, and I think the minor league performance kind of indicates that.
Yeah, I mean, and there aren't many James Woods. There aren't many Juan Sotos, right? That's lightning striking. This is if there is such a thing, a more normal course of events, and it's still not normal. He's still way ahead of where he should be at this age and stage, because you mentioned it 13, 14 months ago playing in college, and now he'll be making his debut here this evening, you know, weather willing. So you look at the profile, and to me, the thing I've said to folks that have asked and I've said on this show a million times is every level he's gone up. That's from high school to college, college to lower minor leagues. And each level, there has been an initial adjustment period where he, like every human being ever that's gone up in difficulty, you know, with the occasional like God tier guys that we've already referenced as exceptions, he's struggled, then adjusted, then thrived. He's in the middle of doing that right now. So I expect a similar course of events. And that, to me, is why it makes sense to give him that little bit extra room right before September 1st. Give him a few games up here to kind of get, you know, used to the levels, to see the velocity and everything that comes with it. And then I expect him to do very well. I mean, his minor league numbers were better than, say, Bryce Harper's. A smaller sample for Bryce, but at AAA, it wasn't like he was tearing the cover off the ball. And Mike Rizzo came and saw him play, and he said, "What took you so long?" Right? Because he knew we belonged in the bigs. I'm not saying they're the same person or anything different. It's just, it's not always a one-to-one indicator. You know, sometimes you find out about a guy that he needs the lights on, needs the highest level. Who knows?
We don't know about, like, all we can see when we go on to MILB.com or whatever, unless you're streaming the games like so many people are now with apps and watching Rochester, he might go 0-for-4 and hit four balls 100 miles an hour. And, you know, three of those should have been hits, and maybe he could have had two doubles down the line and just missed the chalk or whatever, right? Maybe he hit a ball to the fence. There was a home run he had robbed, I know, a few weeks ago as an example, deep on the warning track. And so the numbers are helpful enough, but they don't really mean a ton. But he's hitting .270 this year in the minors, which is very solid. The league batting average in the big leagues, on average right now, is .242. It's about that. It's a few points higher last time I checked in the minor leagues. But you're talking about 25 or so points above, you know, league batting average, so to speak, in the minors. His OPS is almost 800, which is very, very good. He's hit for pretty legit power since he got bumped up to Rochester. Remember, Wilmington, the A-plus affiliate for the Nationals, and Harrisburg, their AA affiliate, those are terrible ballparks on right-handed hitters from a power standpoint. So to get to Rochester, which plays a little more neutral, especially as the weather's warming up here, you've started to see the ball fly out of the yard for him more doubles, more homers. The big thing for me was early in the year he was striking out a lot.
Yep.
And he's done a much better job as the season's gone on, cutting down on the strikeouts, the walks have come up. I think that is something that the Nats probably have to be very excited about as it pertains to determining that they're willing to give him a shot at the big leagues.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, I expect what happens to most guys when they get up here. Maybe it's going a little fast, and as you get some of that experience, you see some pitchers maybe go around the league one time, you build your book, you build your file, you get more comfortable at that level, and I expect them to do the same. He has adjusted and then thrived at every level of baseball he's been at. There's no higher one than this. I expect him, you know, to go through a couple of speed humps. There's that word again, speed humps instead of speed bumps, but go through some of those and come out clean on the other side, because he's not a guy that's going to be beaten down by failure. He's not worried about it. The makeup is plus, plus, plus in that regard, right? He knows he belongs up here. So an 0 for 12, a 1 for 22 is not going to change that in his mind.
It's a chance, though, tonight, and I don't want to bury the lead, for what could be just a really cool, fun night at the ballpark.
Yeah.
Like, for baseball nerds and big Nats fans, if you were here for James Wood's debut, you know what I'm talking about. In his at-bats, it was almost like the Scherzer 20-strikeout game. Everybody's on their feet. Every ball is a loud ovation. Every strike is a universal groan from 20-plus thousand people that night. Sounds like they're going to have over 30,000, they're hoping, this evening at this ballgame with some of the walk-up crowd they're anticipating with the Cruz debut added to tickets already sold. But there are tickets available this evening if you want to come down to the ballpark. The really cool thing is we're going to be down on the field for batting practice like we did when James Wood debuted. So we're going to go down there in about an hour, and we'll be able to interview members of the staff and players live on the show as they're taking their cuts. Pretty cool access the Nats are giving us today. So you'll want to be listening to that in the 3 o'clock hour for sure. A pretty rare thing to get to do here on 106.7 The Fan. And the weather update is very positive for now. It started raining right as we were about to go on the air.
Yep.
So we hoofed it. We got upstairs. We're now at the broadcast level, which is like the seventh floor at this ballpark at the very, very top of Nats Park behind home plate. And that's where we're broadcasting from. But the sun has come out. The clouds have gone away. The rain is stopped, and they're starting to mop off the tarp and prepare the field, hopefully, for BP. So maybe it was just a quick storm, and the evening's going to be a lot prettier. The expectation by game time is things should be looking up weather-wise. So we'll keep you abreast as we get closer to first pitch on all things Nationals. But next, want to get into the Commanders preseason finale at home last night against the Patriots, who helped their cause, who hurt their cause. You're listening to Grant and Danny on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey, and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Washington is sitting most of their starters. Dan Quinn's the new coach. This feels like less of a rebuild in Washington than it is for the Patriots.
Well, and you assume that Dan Quinn's going to be able to come in here and fix the defense that was dead last a season ago. They were not good at all. And it doesn't hurt if you bring in the Heisman Trophy winner, right? Jaden Daniels has simply dazzled since he's gotten to Washington. And, Mike, I have to say, I think he is going to be a superstar in this league.
Chris Collinsworth, Mike Tirico last night on NBC, the telecast of Commanders Patriots in primetime, Sunday Night Football for the finale, not just of Washington's preseason, but all the exhibition games in the NFL this August. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. On the Fan, it's Dylan Cruz Day, so we are over at Nationals Park where the sun has come out. They're getting ready to take the tarp off the field after some early rainstorms this afternoon, and it sounds like the team will be taking batting practice, so we're going down to the field for that next hour. Big show. In that, we will be breaking down some of Josh Harris's comments as he met with the media yesterday, discussing last night's preseason game, getting you ready for Cruz's debut with the Nats tonight. And also, Danny, how about this? Every now and then, we give away prizes on this show.
We do that.
This is one of the best prizes I remember us giving away because we got Kevin Hart tickets at a quaint, awesome venue for comedy, DAR Constitution Hall.
That's great.
Can you imagine a better venue?
No.
To see Kevin Hart, that's going to be kick butt. We're giving those tickets away all week long. Let's do it at 6 o'clock.
I agree.
Stretch run of the show just before we're done tonight at about 6:15 ahead of Nats pregame. So make note, 3.5 hours from now, right at 6, either be listening or be back here so that you can try to win those Kevin Hart tickets on Grant and Danny. We'll give those away throughout the week, staggered at different points all week long here on The Fan. But let's get into last night's preseason game, our coverage of the Commanders presented by Paul Henry's Window Installation. PaulHenrysWindows.com, your clear home improvement choice. 34 guys didn't play. 34 players were sat by Dan Quinn and company. Presumably all going to make the roster, but certainly, you know, 31, 32 of those guys are very, very safe. You got some banged up bubble players in there too. But if you played last night, there's something on the line.
Yeah.
Who helped themselves, who didn't, let's get into that. Who shined? Who was someone that stood out that you think maybe improved their chances?
There are a few names that come to mind, and I'm mostly thinking the earlier samples against the Patriots, you know, ones or guys that are going to play for them. I know they're terrible, but still, those are NFL players.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
the Patriots are going to stink.
I think they might stink.
They're about to pay the piper for a long, long time of not stinking. Their offensive line, Danny, minus their center that didn't play, and you could tell because their backup snapped the ball on the ground constantly.
He hated snapping it. Oh, he hated it.
That's the worst offensive line I've seen in a long time. Washington's twos dominated them. But anyway, we're not on in Boston.
a few names come to mind, but I'll start with Jeremy McNichols. I thought early on looked explosive, quick, that in between Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler kind of a role, can catch the ball to the backfield. Nothing crazy. It's not like he ripped off a 100-yard run or anything like that, but I thought he looked that sort of hybrid in between both of them, can almost be both of their backups.
I think he'll probably be the last back in if they keep a third, which they almost certainly will. I would keep not Jeremy McNichols, but the guy who he was competing with last night, Michael Wiley, the undrafted free agent out of Arizona. I like the youth. Here's what I don't know, and what I would assume is he's probably not great in pass protection. Because how many good undrafted rookie running back pass protectors do you find? It's a pretty rare breed. Whereas a guy like McNichols, who's, you know, well-traveled, journeyman, been in and out of lineups for years, he's had to protect the quarterback. So he's probably better in that area. But I think Wiley's faster than McNichols, a little more twitchy, has some wiggle, caught the ball out of the backfield last night as well, had 7 carries for just 26 yards, but had a couple of nice carries called back for penalties. And I just like what I see every time he plays. So if I'm going to echo you with a running back, I'll go Wiley, actually. Give me another guy you like.
Martavis Bryant, I thought, helped himself. And again, I don't think that means he makes the team. That's not what I'm saying. We're asking who helped themselves last night. I thought he did. Caught the touchdown. Would have had another touchdown if it weren't for a holding penalty. Had his guy beat, had him set up. He was going to be by him, hold, and you could see how ticked off he was.
He drew multiple PIs.
Yeah, knowing, like, hey, that was going to be my touchdown, dude. I'm going to put that on film. Whether it's here or somewhere else, you ruined my chance. But then was able to box out at the goal line there and get a TD.
Do you think he makes it?
No.
See, you're quickly dismissing him. And I would say the betting favorite is still that he doesn't. I kind of was talking myself into him making it driving home last night. Why not? They're going to keep 6 receivers, let's say. They don't have 6 receivers that are definitively better than him. They lack size. He is 6'4". You saw on that goal line slant for a touchdown that he boxed the DB out.
Wasn't much of a move there. He just sort of drifted at a 45-degree angle, and that was plenty.
He's just big.
Yeah.
You know, you're just not getting around him. He can also make leaping catches maybe down in the red area on the goal line. I don't know why what Kyle Shanahan would call like the strike zone 30 and in. You wouldn't have maybe a package for him on a day where he's elevated. If they had other size at the position, then I would say, yeah, that's redundant. You don't need him. It's been years since he caught a ball and even more years since he's been good. But they don't. It's a lot of guys that are quite literally between 5'8", Alameda Zaccheaus, and 6 foot. And the one guy who's got any kind of size is Luke McCaffrey, the rookie, who's still learning how to play the position, who's 6 foot two. You saw Adam Peters run over and give Martavis Bryant a big hug. They're very happy for him. That tells you that they kind of like the guy. They're rooting for him. I'm not saying it means that he's going to make it, but if I was Adam Peters, I'd have a hard time cutting him for a guy like Byron Pringle who would make it, or for a guy like, let's say, Kaz Allen or something. Mm-hmm. Like, why can't he make it? They're not good at that position down the depth chart.
That's a fair case. To me, it screams practice squad. It screams, right. Hey, we're not quite ready to count on you for 17 weeks just yet. You haven't played in 6 years, and what football you have played is in a league that we don't have much control over. Let's develop this thing. Let's work it back. Let's continue to get you in shape, and then we'll see. But the guy he's competing with directly to me, or at least indirectly, is Bryson Tremaine. On the flip side, didn't do much to help himself at all. Only had one catch for not minus 3 yards. That wasn't his fault. Got blown up behind the line of scrimmage on like one of those quick screen passes, but just sort of invisible. I don't know if that's because he's already locked it up. I don't know if that's because he wasn't open. You know, it's hard to say, but you look at that line and go, man, not much there.
No, he needed a night, I think. He needed to help himself, and he didn't. When you were out on vacay a couple weeks back, he was on the show. I grabbed him after a practice. I really, really like him. He's also 6'4", undrafted last year out of Stanford. It's his second year with the organization, was on the P-Squad last year. It's the kind of guy I would still keep in the building. He's also shown on special teams that he can cover a little bit, something we haven't seen from Martavis Bryant. And, yeah, if they kept him, I'd be thrilled for the player, and I think it's kind of six in one, half dozen in the other. I think Bryan is just a little bit of a better athlete, and maybe that is a deal-breaker for Tremaine if now you've got someone who brings the size that made him interesting and they're a better athlete. But I guess my point is, yeah, all these guys to me scream practice squad. And what's the difference between being the last receiver in or on the practice squad other than what they're making per week? Not a whole lot. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, Mitchell Tinsley could be the last guy in or P-Squad. Tremaine, Byron Pringle, Martavis Bryant, any of those guys.
Yep.
With the new rules on practice squad, it used to be you had to be essentially never have played a full
like
season.
Early in the league or whatever.
Couldn't accrue a year, and now all of a sudden somebody gets signed who's got 10 years of pelts on the wall and they're on a practice squad being stashed basically post-COVID. How about on the defensive line? Two guys stood out, both competing maybe for the same roster spot. I'm curious who you liked more last night. And who you would keep. Fedarian Mathis, who had been a non-factor and seemed to me like he was in the HOV lane to being released at cutdown day. I thought he was excellent, at times dominant. Now, he was playing against a center that maybe doesn't make the Patriots and event against a horrendous line. But he was extremely noticeable. And then I thought John Ridgeway was great. Ridgeway flashed like a strobe light. And if those guys are both competing for the same job, presumably Ridgeway has a leg up on Mathis based on training camp the rest of the preseason. But Mathis early and then Ridgeway a little bit more as the game went on. I thought both really, really did themselves some favors last night. I don't know if you can keep both with Allen, with Payne, with some of the other veteran competition you've got at the position because they drafted Johnny Newton. But if they needed a good game to make it, both of them did that.
Yeah, this is one of those positions, and you'd like to be in a team position, organizational position where this happens more, where you're going to cut a good player. There's not a lot of positions where that's the case. You're talking about somebody has to make receiver because that's not a good spot for them. This is the good spot, that defensive line. I like Ridgeway. He did what you should do last night against a group of guys that aren't particularly good that you should be better than as a guy with some experience that's played against ones and twos, you know, for the majority of your few years here in the league. He was really, really good. Mathis, I thought, helped himself certainly. But he's somebody that I think will be able to play somewhere else. He'll catch on and be part of a rotation, whereas I don't know if that's the case with some of these wideouts or other positions.
There's a couple other guys that I thought last night may have forced their way onto the roster who we can get to. And there are players we've got to discuss who may have played their way out of the mix last evening. You hope that the sample is big enough that it didn't come back down to one game. But, you know, guys where it just wasn't a good enough night. We'll get to that next on Grant and Danny. We are live at Nationals Park as Dylan Cruz makes his debut today. We'll be down on the field at field level for batting practice just behind the cage live on the radio next hour. So make sure you're listening here on The Fan.
Third and goal. McSorley slant at the the goal line. Touchdown. Held on to Bud Bryant.
Mike Tirico on the call on NBC last night of Commanders football. The big 20-10 win over the Patriots, Danny.
Huge dub.
I think if you would have quizzed me when I woke up this morning what was the score last night, I would have gotten it, but I would have had to really think about it. It was one of those games where I did not care at all what was going on. There were like six players, frankly, that I was taking notes on. Otherwise, it was just kind of a nice night to be back at the stadium. And I got to say, for the record, I'm sure you saw some of my tweets
at Grant
H. Paulson. I went on a tour before the game, led by members of the Harris ownership group and some of the folks involved with the ticketing and hospitality with the Commanders. They have put a lot of work into that stadium, and I do give them a ton of credit. Now, they'll admit this, I think. I mean, it's lipstick on a pig, right? There's only so much that can be done. I didn't realize this. That's the second oldest stadium in the NFL that hasn't been refurbished, like massively. The Panthers and then the Commanders. That's the list of the oldest stadiums that have not been revitalized or completely reworked.
Yeah, I mean, there's stuff has been done to it, and it was just like taking seats out or blacking out a certain part.
Very different.
So all I wanted to talk about was the fact that Washington had the ball at the New England 41 and punted. In the middle of a kicking shebangas, a kicking competition, whatever it is, they went and got Cade York, but we don't know much. He had a bad season at one point and like hasn't kicked in a while. Instead of kicking a 58-yarder, which isn't a chip shot, but it's what everyone does. Kick the field goal. They punted. That's all I could think about is, what are we doing? What's the point of any of this? I know there's bigger fish to fry, but I just can never understand why the preseason is treated the way that it's treated. It's like we just want to leave. We just want to get out of here as soon as humanly possible. Why not kick the field goal? I don't get that.
The Patriots did a couple times with Joey Sly.
Yeah.
They decided.
We know him. We know that guy.
We do. Like, let's see if he's good from 60 plus. Let's see if he can hit a late, long 50s plus yard field goal.
Kick the field goal.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't get worked up, I'll be honest, over like any kind of strategy, decision making, go for it, not go for it, kick, punt. I didn't have that chip implanted in the head last night when I went to the game. It was just not that kind of day.
Which just makes me worry that we're going to see that during the season, you know, where it's like, well, that's a longer field goal. We should probably punt it for a 15-yard net after the touchback.
You think Riverboat Dan's not going to run the boys back out there to go for it on fourth?
I don't know, man. It makes me worried.
I don't know. I mean, it's just in the same way that it's really hard to take anything out of these preseason games from a playing standpoint, I don't think Dan Quinn's coaching the way he's normally going to coach. And there are times, I think, where it's pretty obvious plays are being called or things are being done just to quiz a player, just to evaluate a player, which is why, to your point, I would have liked to have seen Cade York kick that field goal. Now, for the record, while you bring him up, York was true from 34 and 33, and he made the extra points he was asked to make last night. So pretty good first installment of his kicking duties last evening. We didn't really even get to talk about that because on the same day he was acquired, obviously Jahan Dotson was traded and the York news got buried. It's interesting to me that they traded a draft pick for him rather than just waiting and signing a kicker that got cut. Especially when it comes to his resume being fairly checkered. He did not kick in the league last year. He didn't make an active roster, didn't beat anybody out. 2 years ago, he missed, I think it was like six kicks. He was 18 of 24 or something. Had the huge first game where he had a 58-yard game winner, and then it was downhill after that. But obviously, there's some familiarity with him and confidence in this guy. I know on special teams, one of Washington's assistants was with him in New York at one point last year, I believe. So they've been monitoring him. They've been tracking him. They must have loved him at LSU where he was a pretty special college kicker. But that's a lot of confidence to trade a draft pick when you could just wait a week and sign one of six or seven guys who's been kicking in the league for years.
Yeah, there are a number of competitions with names that you know, right, that's taken place. So, I don't know. This isn't one I'm going to get too terribly worked up about, honestly, in terms of, as you said, the kicker spot. You know, they thought they had this solved. This has kind of ambushed them. Played, you know, no one expected this McManus thing to blow up in their face the way that it did. But it just, I would have had far more urgency to, you know, have kind of this ongoing kicking thing. They decided to wait. And then instead of waiting the whole way, if you're going to wait, you wait for what you're talking about today, tomorrow, et cetera, you know, cut down day. But they said, we'll solve it 3 days early. Just curious to me as to how they did it. Again, not something I'm criticizing, just interesting.
One name I wanted to throw out there that we didn't mention as far as players that helped themselves last night, and then a couple of guys who maybe didn't. I'm not saying this is 53-man roster relevant, but I thought Trace McSorley may have given him a chance to extend his career. Maybe it's on the practice squad here. Maybe it's with another team as a third guy or a P-squad player. But just to see him go out there and run for 40 yards and lead a 20-point half, orchestrating the offense, throwing for a buck 25 and a touchdown in a couple of quarters. I thought, for a guy that's been around for 2 weeks,
yep,
he's just a gamer. You know, you saw it at Penn State his whole career. You've seen it all the way back to his high school days here in the area. He's just a dude that's scrappy. He's running over corners. He's a fun guy to watch.
100%. I mean, somebody would go, maybe it can be my Taysom Hill. I don't say that flippantly. He's 20 pounds less than Hill is, but you saw him deliver the blow to the member of the secondary. The whole team went crazy when that happened right there on that sideline. He can run the ball around, and if you it can be one of those things where you show this kind of read option look, and you see a quarterback keeper, you run certain things, and then that one time that the defense gets sucked up, you got a trick play off it, Navy midshipman style, you loft something over the top. Somebody might go, that's an interesting twist for us. That's a package we could use. So, yeah, McSorley, I thought, helped himself.
I think K.J. Henry, the fifth-round pick last year by the Rivera regime out of Clemson, is also going to make this roster at defensive end. Had a sack. Now, he was unblocked. It was a busted assignment for the Patriots, but I thought, again, in the preseason, early in the game, he looked pretty active, and he's just decently athletic. He was, you could tell why he was like a all-the-stars recruit for Clemson originally. There's some things he could do on the edge that I think are going to help as a depth guy for this defense. On the other side of things, I love Cole Turner. I want Cole Turner to be on this team. I don't see how it works at this point. He made a really nice catch. He tends to use that catch radius to get wide of the frame and kind of make these athletic catches in the middle of the field, and he did for 25 yards at the end of the night. But that was after a couple penalties. That was after, you know, he had two balls hit him in the hands on the first drive that he couldn't corral. Not all his fault. One was contested. The other was not a great throw. But when you need to have the big night, and then clearly they're throwing you passes, they're kind of calling your number early to try to see what's what, and it just goes the way last night did. I have a hard time imagining him making this roster.
Yeah, especially because Yankoff had a nice moment as well.
Can you say that on the radio?
I think so. Yeah, I'm talking about a person's name, Grant.
Oh, okay.
Colson Yankoff. I don't know what you're talking about. That's weird. Anyway, and they already drafted Ben Sinnott. They brought in Zach Ertz. So, yeah, I think it's an uphill climb in that regard.
Grant and Danny on the fan from Nationals Park. Josh Harris did the thing that other owners occasionally do. We're just not used to it in Washington, D.C.
It's weird here.
So it's pretty crazy. He talked to the media yesterday. Want to discuss that next on G&D here on The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.